This episode of The Drive with Lante and Derek Piper is brought to you by Two Men in a Truck, movers who care. Visit them online at twomenchampagne.com for a free estimate.
Let's do it. Good morning. It is The Drive with Tay and Piper. I'm Lante. He is Derek Piper. Trevor Valise is here as well. Trevor's been doing some things. He got Max 62, Max 70, Sosa's 20th, his 66th. All those home runs that we're going to watch on Sunday night, I'm going to relive it. You guys are going to kind of realize the scope of it for the first time, because baseball, I don't want to say was dying, but certainly after the strike, baseball was not a fun thing to many people. And McGuire and Sosa in that summer was so special. They brought it back. And I mentioned, Derek, to you that that weekend that he hit, I think he hit 67, 8, 9, and 70. McGuire did. And I was covering a Rams-Arizona Cardinals game at the Dome. And people were listening, of course, to the Cardinals baseball game. And when McGuire hit 70, Tony Banks was in shotgun formation, and he false started because it was so loud in the Dome. And then over the press box came Mark McGuire just hit number 70. It was a really cool moment down in St. Louis. That city was electric. And one guy that has lived through a lot of this is Brian Bartow, media relations director for the Cardinals. This is a nice little get to get Brian. He's a busy man. Brian, how are you, buddy?
Doing good, Lon. You know, as good as we can without baseball. Oh. And, you know, we're hopeful. We're going to get back out there and start creating new memories as we move forward, as we look back on these memories from 98. But, doing good. The sun's shining. And it's one day at a time. But certainly looking forward to Sunday and the 30 for 30, the long gone summer, and the look back to that magical season that Mark and Sammy and even Griffey to an extent.
Right.
He was in the early mix in that home run race, took us on.
Well, Brian, it is an honor to have you on, because you're a guy that sets up interviews. You do a lot of the media relations. And I thought today we had talked about Klabes, and of course he's just king, you know, but he was on our Jeremy show this morning. And then we talked to Randy Carricker and a few people, and I was like, Who else could we get? And then it hit me. I'm like, Brian Bartow was on the other side. Not on the other side, but you had a unique perspective of this. And Brian, what exactly was your role, the same as it is now back in 98? And kind of how did that play out for you individually during that season?
Well, first, yes, I am still in that role, thankfully, and very appreciative of the opportunity to still be with the Cardinals, and had been blessed with many, many great moments in my career and working with the ball club here in St. Louis. But yeah, that was as probably as unique as a season as any. Every year there's, well, except for one year, there's been a World Series champion and World Series and playoffs and all that and so on. But this was a once in a lifetime. And, you know, I would read and hear the stories like a lot of us did and still do about Roger Maris and his
right.
Going after the home run record there in 61, Babe Ruth mark. And there was a lot of things afterwards as I look back on that season now that are very similar that I could see, you know, with Mark and how that season unfolded. And it really started even the year before when he came over in the trade from Oakland. And he did have a 50-plus homer season that year.
Oh, wow.
To finish out. And I think he hit 24 thereabouts. I was looking the other day in 50-some games as a Cardinal after the trade.
Crazy.
So there was a lot of, talk and, projections that, hey, this home run mark might be achievable if he had expansion that year with
sure.
two expansion teams coming in. And so that carried over into the winter and then into spring training. And, we get the season going, and opening day, he hits the grand slam against the Dodgers. And I think he homered the first four games that year, and it really just took off from there and just, continued to grow each and every month, really.
Brian, clearly a year that a lot on your plate. I'm sure you had a few media showing up to watch that thing. But how, in your interactions with Big Mac, how did he handle the spotlight or just the pressure of knowing that it was him against Sammy each and every day and kind of tracking that, but then also just the expectation of anybody that went to the ballpark on that day was hoping to see Mac put one in the stands.
Yeah, and that's what was, tough at times for Mark, because it just wasn't his style. He wants to be a good teammate. He wants to be just one of the 25 guys. And, just go out, whatever I can do on a given day to help the team win. And he's just not a flashy guy. He doesn't really gravitate to be in the face of baseball or the face of the Cardinals at the time or the face of the home run race. And he prefers to sort of just blend in with his teammates. And we had, some other players having terrific years that season for us. It sort of got overlooked with Langford and Ron Gant, Brian Jordan, our outfielders. And, and Mark would come in the clubhouse and see all the reporters wanting to talk to him and nobody really paying attention to what his teammates are doing. And it is a team sport. You're trying to win games. And it's not an individual sport. And we weren't really in the playoff race. We were right around 500. So realistically, not a pennant team or into the pennant race in September. Now, the Cubs were.
Right.
And they end up going to playoffs that year. And, there was differences there. But, yeah, it was tough. It wasn't really, Mark's thing to be a face of the game. But he after a time, he realized that, it isn't going away. It's only going to get more, so I might as well just try to enjoy this as much as I can. Although, to walk in his shoes both on and off the field and, the demands on him, not just with the game, but even such things as batting practice became such a spectacle where he was almost had, even Dave McKay, one of our first base coaches, poured BP pitcher to Big Mac. I mean, the pressure on him to throw strikes in batting practice was unbelievable because everybody wanted to see Mark just, go off in batting practice and these tape measure shots. So it was very unique and certainly, like I said, a once-in-a-lifetime deal.
This is great to reminisce with Brian Bartow, Media Relations Director for the St. Louis Cardinals. Follow Brian on Twitter, at STLBirdBrian. I want to piggyback off Derek's question with regards to McGuire. And, Brian, I wish I could tell you that my memory was this golden, but I actually went back and watched the highlight of number 62 when it just scraped over the wall, essentially, and Joe Buck gave the classic touch first mark. When that ended, and I remember, like you said, McGuire was almost stoic, right? He was a guy that you could tell was uncomfortable a little bit with that limelight, but you could almost tell, Brian, when that 62 left and he came around and he picks his son up in the air and then, he goes into the stands with the Marises and then he start, Sosa comes in from right field, which was so classy of Sammy. And, McGuire does that kiss thing to Sammy and they both hug. You could almost see the stress of that season just come off of him with that one home run.
Yeah, for a moment or for a night. And we all know that there was still a good month to go in the season and right up even to the final weekend. But, that was in his, it was, I want to say, was it 61, home run 61? He hit on his father's 61st birthday and his parents were in the stands, except the Maris family. He came through, I tell you what, he came through, it seemed, more times than not. I mean, just the pressure, but he always seemed to rise to the occasion. It was remarkable how he could do that on such a consistent basis.
It's crazy.
Yeah, boy, I look back too, and it's hard to believe it's been 22 years.
Right.
Brian, I wanted to add. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I lost my signal here for a sec. Hard to believe it's been 22 years, but it was such a neat thing to be a part of, and we learned as we went along. I remember our staff starting that year, as you do each season, expectations and you certainly heard the buzz about the possible home run race, and Griffey was in that mix and that talk too, Ken Griffey Jr. And boy, it just kept building and building. We got to June, and you could sense this is a little different. Some of the requests we were getting,
I bet,
for Mark, and you really had to start managing it. And we did. We reached out to the league. I want to say it was late June to see if we could do some alterations because the players expect that, you know, baseball, of course, it's pretty much every day. So
right.
There's media each day. And I had heard or read along the way that Cal Ripken had sort of done this when he was approaching the consecutive game streak, where he would meet once a series, you know, with the media just to try to manage it a little bit. So we got the approval from the league, and we did that starting in June, where we'd go into a city, especially on the road where, you know, they didn't see as often. And Mark would do 30 minutes, first game of the series, pregame in the dugout. And then pretty much it was hands-off after that, unless, of course, he would hit a home run, which he did often, and or had some other role in the outcome of the game. So we did that to try to, you know, manage it. But, boy, by the time we got the Labor Day weekend and the meeting with the Cubs when we broke the record, it was
– wow.
We had more people, more media people, I think, outside the stadium – covering that weekend and that event than we did in the building. It was crazy.
That's great.
Brian, were the batting practice shows as epic as they sound? Because
yes.
I read a Sports Illustrated article, Tom Verducci might have done it, about the people in Wrigley hanging out outside of the stadium. Knew that they probably wouldn't catch one if they were actually in the bleacher seats or waiting to get the baseballs that they go onto the street. What did you see from some of those spectacles?
Yeah, it was incredible. The ballparks couldn't contain him. He put one out in Phoenix back at the time. Bank, well, I don't remember his Bank One ballpark or Chase Field, whatever it's called. It's changed a few times over the years, but I'll never forget. They've got these. You know, it's a removable roof, or you know, they can open and close the building. Oftentimes, it's closed because of the heat out there in the summer. But they have these sort of panels in the outfield. Way back, and he shot one through one of those open panels during BP, and
wow.
Of course Dodger Stadium with the pavilion roof out there,
right.
And knocking one off the, you know, the top of the pavilion roof, which is pretty much unheard of. And it was incredible. You know, you just the majestic blast, the light tower power they call it. You know, it was out of this world.
That's awesome, Brian. I was going to ask you. And of course, that'll be Sunday that we'll get to relive that, and I cannot wait to do that. Brian, we kind of started, and I wanted to get a couple of this before I let you go, but we don't have baseball. And I know, like you said, we're kind of hoping here that something happens, and as the two sides kind of try to meet in the middle here on something. But for somebody like you that is ridiculously busy nonstop during a baseball season, what has this been like for you personally to – you know, kind of see the game? And I know it's happened to you before in this role, so it isn't your first time with this, but certainly with the COVID-19, the pandemic, that is something that shut it down right in the middle of spring training. And now, of course, trying to figure out from both sides if they can start again or when they will start again. What is it like for you personally to kind of live through this right now?
Well, I hope this is a once in a lifetime, this health pandemic that we're all going through with the COVID, and certainly a very serious matter. And, you know, the team and the league and everyone in our sport and all the other, you know, sports as well, all looking at models and ways of getting back onto the field or onto the ice, or the court. It's different, for sure. I guess, you know, I unfortunately have, you know, experienced some labor shutdowns with baseball in my career. Thankfully, not many in several years. But the strangeness of this is every sport, there's nothing else going on. There's, you know, we've got golf coming back. The PGA Tour started up yesterday, I believe, and some NASCAR and such. But the four major sports are still in suspended operation. So that's different. It is strange that even without the games, how busy I seem to find myself. With different back and forths, and there's a lot of things that we in baseball do off the field with community relations,
right.
And of course messaging, and you know, things going through with all the uncertainty, and trying to communicate to the fans, and the things, you know, with schedules, and of course ticket refunds, and programs that we've had to either postpone or cancel. So there's a lot going on even without the game.
Yeah.
The sooner we can get the talk and the focus and everything back in the field, obviously probably without fans, certainly in the beginning, and maybe we get lucky and we get some fans in at some point. We'll see. But just so if we could get it back on the field so at least folks could continue to watch and, you know, watch it on TV or listen on the radio, that'd be great.
Last one with Brian Bartow, Media Relations Director for the Cardinals. Take us inside a clubhouse each day during a season. Like you said, it's a grind, number one, on a season. But, you know, the players kind of are accountable every day, and they do a wonderful job. I've been down at spring training. You were a great host for Jeremy and I when we came down in 11. We feel like we were the good luck charm. We ended up winning the World Series, of course, that year. We'll take it. But, you know, every morning we'd walk into spring training and pretty much everybody was available to talk and they'd all talk to you. And I've been into plenty of clubhouses after games where the guys would sit there at their locker and talk to you. I mean, that's not easy to do, is it, on a daily basis? And for a guy like you that kind of has to coordinate all that, that can't be an easy job, Brian.
Yeah, it's different for baseball for sure compared to the other sports. You know, just looking at our manager, Mike Schilt, he will do, you know, at a minimum, you know, two press, you know, meetings each day, each game, a pregame press briefing and then postgame. You know, and like I said, you know, earlier, it's 7 days a week. You start up, as you guys mentioned, you know, when you came down to spring training, you're going, you know, you start your season in February and go through your whole Halloween. and, you know, there is availability each day in baseball, whereas the other sports, they do have a little bit of a, you know, change because they're not playing games every day, although they do have workouts and those type of things. But there's a little bit of a break from it. But it's a day, and, you know, like they say, it's the marathon, not the sprint, for sure, with baseball. Although this year we may be more in sprint mode if we get back here with a short season, but it's definitely you definitely need to pace yourself and avoid too many ups, too many downs, because it is such a long run. But it's what I love about the sport, really. Yes. Though it's just you build a narrative over the course of the summer, and it's almost like reading a novel. It's just each chapter, each day is a new chapter in that novel, and you start writing it, and really in the off season, and you wait to see what the final product is, you know, come October.
It's amazing. Hey, we did have a caller call in, and Brian, if I'm putting you on the spot here, I apologize. You can pass on the question, but he asked about Dish Network and the dispute with Fox Sports Midwest. Do you know anything about that? I know a lot of people around here, I've got DirecTV, so I'm not interrupted with seeing Cardinals games, but do you know if anything is closer on that with Dish, or is that even something that you would kind of talk about?
That's sort of out of my area, and got I'm it. Not trying to dodge it by
no,
any means.
No.
But, and of course, now with the pandemic and everything, with relationships to coverage of the games, like I said, some of these questions and things we're dealing with without baseball, that falls under that bucket as well, or into that bucket as well. But I'm sorry, I don't have an answer on that one.
No worries. And right when everybody was starting to like Brian Bartow, by the way, he's a Michigan guy. He's a Michigan fan, I think. You're in Illini country.
Well, yeah, born and raised up in Battle Creek, Kellogg's country. So, right. Grew up a Detroit Tiger fan, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And, real thankful to have had the opportunity to join the Cardinals, be a part of such a fantastic organization with such a great history and legacy, for sure, and experience. Like I said, I've been blessed with experience a couple World Series along the way. Thankfully, you guys came to spring training in 2011 and left that lucky charm behind, and we took it and ran with it.
Right. Well, Brian, you have done a wonderful job through the years, and you know you're good when you've been there this long for such a model organization like the Cardinals. Brian Bartow, this was a treat to have you on, sir. Media Relations Director for the Cardinals. Follow him on Twitter, at STLBird. Brian, now you can walk over to Ballpark Village and have a cold one. Enjoy the weekend, my friend.
Yeah, everybody stay safe, and you know, we'll hopefully get this game and get our Cardinal baseball back on the field here sooner than later. And really appreciate everyone's patience, but the most important thing right now, stay safe. And,
amen.
And we'll get it back. We'll get it back. It's painful for all of us, I know, right now.
Sure.
And appreciate all of our great fans up there in Champaign, Urbana area as well.
Well, Brian, thank you.
Even the Cubs fans.
Even those guys, right? We appreciate them on occasion. Yeah. Hey, Brian, thank you so much.
All right. You guys have a great weekend, and take care.
All right, buddy.
give me the opportunity to spend some time with you.
Oh, it was a blast. Thank you so much. That is Brian Bartow. He is the, again, media relations director, or director of media relations, however you want to say it, for the St. Louis Cardinals. He's been in that role for a long time, Derek. And, you know, obviously, when you're when you've done a job that long, you've done something right, correct? I mean, you are doing something right.
Yeah.
Brian is, you think about the guys, you know, the people he's worked with Jack Buck and Mike Shannon and Joe Buck and Dan McLaughlin and Al Roboski and all of those guys, plus the Derek Goulds of the world for STL and Rick Hummel, the commissioner, they call him down there, and Mike Bush and Trey Wingo back in the day was down in St. Louis with Malcolm Briggs and Frank Cusimano. I mean, there's been great media in St. Louis, and certainly that is the case in Chicago. I could go through a list of that as well, but Brian's worked with all of them. And when you look, and today I checked kind of a Google search of Brian, and when you look at all of the Bernie Miklitz, that's another guy I failed to mention. When you look at all of the responses from media members towards Brian, they all just put him on a pedestal. They think he does a wonderful job. He's very fair in what he does. I said to try to kind of coordinate it with people here or localize it. It's kind of like Kent Brown at Illinois. Kent's been here a long time. Now, when I say Kent's been here a long time, he always thinks I'm calling him old. He's not old because he's close to my age, and I'm not old, right?
No,
so, but Kent has done a wonderful job here at Illinois. We know that. And that's kind of what Brian has meant to the St. Louis Cardinals. Ironically, he said he's from Detroit. Tonight, you'll be able to hear game two of the 2006 World Series, Cardinals and Tigers. Of course, the Cardinals won that series against Detroit. Last night, we had the game where Anthony Reyes battled Justin Verlander, and Pujols homered. The Cardinals won that game one. That was fun in 06. All right, good stuff with Brian. That was fun that he joined us. When we come back, Will Klein, Eastern Illinois pitcher, was drafted yesterday in the fifth round by the Kansas City Royals. And what was weird is when I read the article today, it said in the final round of the MLB draft, the fifth round. I'm like, wait a minute, there's usually 40 rounds. So, of course, things changed this year and will forever change going forward. As Dan Hartlib told us a couple of days ago, now only 20 rounds going forward. But Will Klein, he's a Bloomington, Indiana kid. And Trevor, you'll be happy to know, I think he's a Cub fan. He said he grew up going to a lot of Reds and Cubs games, but I believe he is more of a Cubs fan because I said, well, you signed with the wrong team in Missouri. He goes, oh, that's all right. So I could tell where he was going with that. But we'll visit with Will when we come back. That's going to be fun as he begins his dream of playing Major League Baseball. If you want to weigh in, 359-2255. Follow us on Twitter. Just search at The Drive 93.5.
Our podcasts are on all platforms, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can also go to TanePiper.podbean.com. Stream us live at StevieJay.com, J-A-Y.com. Or you can watch live on YouTube. Just search Tane Piper or The Drive 93.5.
It is The Drive.
This episode of The Drive with Lante and Derek Piper is brought to you by Two Men in a Truck, movers who care. Visit them online at TwoMenChampagne.com for a free estimate.
Long's Garage, the oldest auto repair facility in Champaign-Urbana, deals with engine repairs, transmissions, brakes, suspensions, electrical, air conditioning. But one thing they pride themselves on in the one-stop shop for vehicle repairs is tires. Kumho Tires is having an instant rebate sale. If you buy a set of four Kumho passenger tires, you get a $60 credit. If you have a truck and buy a set of four light truck tires, you get $120 credit. So go on to Long's Garage at 503 East Main Street or schedule an appointment at 217-367-3900. 42.
Game Day Spirit, the official fan store of the Fighting Illini, is now open 7 days a week at the corner of Neal and Kirby in Champaign. Head in, check out their newly redesigned floor plan with their selection of buy one, get one free t-shirts, along with other items from top brands such as Nike, Champion, Columbia, and more. For the best selection of Fighting Illini gear in town, head down to Game Day Spirit, 1602 South Neal Street in Champaign. Game Day Spirit, where Illini fans shop.
Right now, more than 125,000 children are waiting to be adopted from foster care. The Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption works around the clock to find them the permanent, loving homes they deserve. You can help. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
Hey, Betty, you live at Baytown Apartments, right?
Yeah, just off Prospect and Boardwalk Drive in Champaign.
There's a lot of great restaurants and shopping there. Is there a gym nearby?
Who needs it? Baytown has 24/7 fitness center and sauna at the clubhouse.
Wow!
It's great, but the weather being so nice, I've been getting my workout on the jogging paths around the lake.
You have all that at Baytown Apartments?
Yeah, it's the best. Staff does a great job keeping the place beautiful.
Do you think they have any units available?
Actually, they have newly remodeled 1- and 2-bedroom units. You should check them out at baytown.net. Tell the courtesy staff at the welcome gate and get a tour.
St. Louis has been blessed with a rich historic baseball team.
Swinging a long one in the left field!
29 playoff appearances, 23 pennants, 11 world championships. Great memories.
Smith corks one into right down the line.
Great moments.
It may go.
Great games.
Go crazy, folks.
Now, get ready for the Classic Cardinals Games replay.
Tonight at 6:15, the 2006 World Series Game 2 on ESPN 93.5.
Big Grove Tavern is now open for patio service. 7 nights a week and brunch service too on Saturdays and Sundays. Great steaks, burgers, seafood, and vegetarian options, plus some of the best cocktails anywhere with excellent wines and craft beer. Give Big Grove a call at 239-3505, email sales at biggrovetavern.com, or check out their Facebook page. Everyone is welcome at Big Grove. Big Grove, big flavor.
A reminder that Honda BMW of Champaign is still open by appointment. They're available for vehicle service and are helping keep you safe with complete disinfection offered for the inside of your vehicle. If you don't want to leave your home and head in to Honda BMW, no worries. They're available online. That's right. You can buy a car completely online and they'll deliver it to you. Find the vehicle that fits your needs without ever leaving your couch. Honda BMW of Champaign, here to serve you during this tough time. Located at the corner of Neal and Burwash or online, drivechampaign.com.
Hi, it's Stevie J. Sit back and relax and take the drive with Lante and Derek Piper. Weekdays 4 to 6 right here on ESPN Radio 93.5.
We do this every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And I know for some of you, you've taken advantage, but if you're looking for dinner tonight, I mean, listen, we all are cooking galore during this pandemic, right? And now, why not reward yourself on a Friday and head to Gifford? It is not that far, I promise. If you're right around the Champaign-Urbana area, even if you're down in the Villa Grove, Tuscola area, it's not that far, just a little bit north of St. Joe, the Long Branch Steakhouse, steaks, ribs, chicken, pork, unbelievable hamburgers. Long Branch Steakhouse, downtown Gifford, now with outdoor seating. Give them a call, 568-7722. That's 568-7722. Is The Drive with Tay and Piper. I'm Lon Tay. Derek Piper alongside, as is Trevor Valise. We're going to hear some highlights of Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa coming up at 5:05, and of course, the award-winning Who You Got. Pat Chambers, 10-0, joined us on the air, Penn State's basketball coach, a couple of weeks ago. Today, he squares off with John Calipari in a no-holds-barred UFC battle. This might be a cage match, this one. Couple East Coast guys
some
going at it.
Intensity in this one.
This could
sure
be fun. All right, Derek, you know me. You know me with my affinity of Indiana kids when it comes to basketball, right? And especially like Luke Goody. They got him. Illinois is going to get Luke Goody to play basketball next year. It sounds like Illinois missed out on a really good pitcher that ended up going to Eastern Illinois. And he's on the air with us right now. Will Klein, fifth-round pick out of, by the Kansas City Royals. Will, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I think you and I had a conversation this morning that you're not necessarily a Cardinals fan, and I'm going to assume that you're not necessarily an Illini fan either, are you?
I can't say I am.
Bloomington, Indiana. I told you this morning when I called you from the office, I said, Will, this will not be as exciting as a call as you got here in the last couple of days by the Kansas City Royals. What was that like, that moment when the phone rang? Did you have an indication that that was going to happen? And if not, what was it like to hear that voice on the other side say, we're going to draft you?
Yeah, it was kind of unreal. I knew a little bit, like 5-10 minutes prior, that they were thinking about drafting me. My advisor was keeping me in the loop. But he's like, oh, they have an offer. If you're good, I'll tell them. And then so it was like, 5 minutes before they announced the pick on TV, they kind of called me into their draft. And man, I mean, it still doesn't feel real. It still feels like it hasn't happened. Like I'm still going to go play baseball at Eastern, but I mean, my whole family, me, we're just kind of in shock. And so definitely a once-in-a-lifetime experience, I'd say that.
Will, I've got the scouting report in front of me. Correct me if any of this is wrong.
Uh-oh.
But a big, hard-throwing righty, 6'5", can touch 99 or even 100.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where do the flames come from?
I like to think I'm pretty strong, but I've heard my arm's pretty fast, too. So that plays a role, definitely.
Now, reading about your sophomore year last year at Eastern, I know control was a little bit of an issue. You fixed that in summer league ball, had 21 innings and only 8 walks, if I believe, struck out 38 pitching for Lakeshore. So what was kind of the key to finding that control and really, you know, mixing great stuff with being over the plate?
Yeah, it was more of a mentality change for me. I was kind of letting myself get in my own head during that spring season. And when I got to Lakeshore, I was like, you know what? I'm the closer now. I'm just going to go out and not let anyone come back and win a game. And so I kind of got in that mindset before every time I went out, and just the consistency of that played into consistency on the mound, and it all led to just a great summer overall.
Will, your projected role in Major League Baseball with the Royals, do you feel it'll be out of the bullpen?
I definitely think it'll be a late inning bullpen guy.
Is that a mindset that you're able? I know you just kind of touched on that, but you know, when it comes to pitching, now I don't know, Derek. I'm not going to speak for you, but I don't throw 99. I don't throw 89 or 79 or 69. I'm not sure maybe where it ends, 49 possibly at my age. But Will, I mean, I assume at some point it clicks to where you become a thrower, then all of a sudden you become a pitcher. And is that a moment like you could almost tell, like, you know what, now I got to figure it out. I know where to go with my pitches. I know how to, you know, go fastball here, change up away, et cetera. Do you know kind of when that moment hit you?
Yeah, it definitely helped hit me probably just the winter before that sophomore season a little more. Just kind of, I figured out how to make that transition from, like you said, thrower to a pitcher, just because before that was just kind of got it through kind of hard. And now I'm drafted pitcher, and so that transition took place right around the early spring of 2019, just because I kind of saw myself have a little more control, a little more game knowledge on the mound versus freshman year, even high school.
Will Klein, our guest. You can follow Will on Twitter. It's at Will Klein 0. Fifth round pick by the Kansas City Royals, Eastern Illinois pitcher. You are only the 7th, I believe, Eastern Illinois player to be taken in the top 5 rounds of the Major League Baseball draft. First since 2009, if I read that correctly. What does that mean to you?
It means a lot, just knowing that I hope I can pave a way for some of the younger guys at Eastern, like knowing that even though it's a smaller school, like you don't have to go to an SEC school to get drafted. It's not all just about where you end up. It's about what you're doing, what your process is, and the best you can make of yourself, really. It's an individual game to get drafted. And so even if your team's really good and you suck, you just got to help your team win, I guess. And so I think we did a good job with that this year. And yeah, as long as you're a team player and doing the best you can for yourself, you're gonna make a name for yourself.
Will Tony Romo have to be concerned about being the poster boy of EIU athletics here in a couple of years?
I like it.
I think he's good. I think he's probably the most famous guy out of EIU ever. Well, Garoppolo might come for him, but
Good point. Good point. Again, back to your last summer, 0.086 ERA. So I'm sure you had a pretty good idea that this was going to be your last collegiate season. But when things shut down, was there any concern or just about what you were trying to show in your last year in college and kind of elevating your stock? Clearly, it was an issue going in the 5th round.
Yeah, I got a little concerned because I know I was making that transition to starter. And so I know I needed to show a few more starts, a few more opportunities to show that I really knew like what I was doing, like that I was going to be able to be a legitimate starter. But I think that summer definitely helped me, especially since it was cut down to 5 rounds. That definitely, increased my stock. And then throwing at Arkansas like I did probably got me a little more money too. And so that all kind of played together and making sure I was legitimate picking these 5 rounds instead of having to head back to Eastern for another year.
Your coach at Eastern, Jason Anderson, of course, a Danville, Danville kid, pitched for the Yankees.
Yep.
A guy that knows what he's talking about when it comes to pitching. How much of a help has he been for you and your career down at Eastern?
Oh, he's been great. I mean, he really helped me make that transition from the kid that kind of threw hard to a professional pitcher now, just mentality-wise, just knowing what it takes to compete at the collegiate and then the next level. Like, he helped me mentality more than anything else. And right. So I can honestly say I probably wouldn't be here without him, just everything he's done for me.
I think that's the amazing thing when we talk to college athletes, that when they talk about their coach, a lot of times it's the mentality. I mean, you guys, you're talented. You know you're talented. You can throw the ball 99. I don't know if you could get it by me, but the point is you're talented. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, the mental side of it, to be able to kind of break down a game with a guy like Jason Anderson who did that. You know, he'd been there, done that before. Mm-hmm. That is pretty amazing, isn't it, to be able to do that and just realize maybe I didn't know everything yet, and now all of a sudden I understand this role a little bit better.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely times I'm like, I don't know. I'd think like, how did that happen? Or like, where did everything go wrong? And he'd break it down simple, just like easy ways for me to understand, like how to keep my head in the game after giving up a home run, or just like how to get back in there, like after a few bad pitches, and just making sure like I stopped just the down spiral early. And so he helped on the mound. He helped as a person. He just, was a great guy in general.
Well, we had Reed Detmers on Monday. Of course, he was the 10th pick by the Angels, a local kid from the Springfield, Illinois area. And it was interesting to talk to him. And then I asked the question, what's next? And what will be next after that? He's like, I'm not sure. So how about you? Like, what have you heard from Kansas City? I mean, obviously, with this pandemic going on, you guys, your draft class here in 2020 is unlike any that has ever been. Because, it's like, we don't know what we're doing next. I guess we're just kind of waiting at home like the rest of the world to figure it out. So what have you been told?
Yeah, like Reed, I really don't have any clue. I know they're trying to probably have player introductions sometime within the next month, but I think it's really all depending on what the MLB and the Players Association, like after they make an agreement, then the minor league comes next. So I think that's what we're all waiting on. But yeah, just ready to go at a moment's notice probably is what the best thing to do is right now.
Tell your brother to call him, zip it in the background there.
Yeah, no, he just left. He was yelling. I don't think he realized what I was doing, but.
I got the car.
Yeah, he's got the car.
That was awesome.
Well, Will, now that you're officially in the league, can you share with us when baseball's coming back?
Yeah.
I wish I knew.
Oh, man. We do, too. We can't wait to see it. And, Will, we're going to be following your career, man. I'm so happy for you. Fifth-round pick by the Kansas City Royals, Eastern Illinois pitcher, making EIU proud, updating a stat down there since 2009, the last time a player went in the top five rounds from the Panthers. Will Klein has now updated that stat. Will, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. Great job and good luck.
Yep, thanks for having me.
All right, buddy. That is Will Klein, EIU pitcher, now a draft pick of the Kansas City Royals. Follow Will on Twitter, at Will Klein 0. I had no idea he threw the ball that hard. What is that like, you think?
What's it like to dunk?
That's a great
not
question.
Just dunk, but like head above the rim dunk.
Yeah, that's right. That's a wonderful question. What is the football equivalent? What's it like to, like we have dunk in
run a 4-3?
Yeah. Exactly. You know, what's it like to skate backwards faster than somebody can skate forwards in hockey? You know, it's like, oh my gosh. Well, that's awesome with Will Klein. That is a kid that obviously has the mentality, he thinks, to be able to do it in the big leagues. And I tell you what, if you're a guy that throws that and you can advance to the major league level in a quick hurry. And of course, Kansas City can always use the help. There's no doubt. And if for some reason he would advance quick this year, the Cardinals and the Cubs may be facing Will Klein, because if baseball resumes and if they do what they're going to maybe do with regards to the Central Divisions playing each other, then he may see a lot of the Cardinals and Cubs if he were fortunate enough to make it to the big leagues this year. Of course, that's a pretty quick jump.
It's going to be really interesting to see how many of those guys there will be. And there probably won't be very many.
I agree.
But what else are they going to do?
Right.
And if you got a,
I mean, if you got a kid,
an electric arm like that.
Yeah.
And you need some help, maybe, if you have injuries or whatever it may be.
What are they going, 40-man rosters?
Sounds right.
So if they do 40, that's a lot of I mean, usually you have 25. So now you're talking an extra 15 players, and you know, you would assume that probably the majority of the 15 would be pitchers because they're worried about arms being ready or overusing arms. I mean, if you thought that the use of the bullpen was strong before, just wait till this year. I mean, when you've got a guy like Will Klein throwing 99, I'm going to go with him in this next inning. Now, of course, you have the three batter rule this year. If we do play baseball, I don't know if anybody remembers that, but a reliever or a pitcher, that is, must face three straight batters or end the inning. So if you come in other words, if Will is brought in with two outs in the eighth and he gets that guy out, then he can be taken out. But otherwise, you have to face a minimum of three hitters now, and they're trying to speed up the game. They're trying to cut down on that kind of, all the pitching changes, which happen a lot, you know, now that the bullpen is so much more prevalent. I just laugh when I think back to when I was growing up watching baseball, when like a guy like Bruce Sutter would come in the seventh inning to close a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, Bruce, we're coming to you in the seventh. You got three in you, right? And then we need you for two tomorrow. And I mean, that's just what it was. That was the mentality then. And of course, a lot of the pitchers just ended, I mean, they would just throw nine innings. It, you know, complete games were so much more prevalent back then,
right,
than they are now. And of course, I'm sure all these saber metrics and all this stuff that you kids brought to the table, I'm sure it tells you that's dumb to do that. But it's interesting how the bullpen has become such a major factor in baseball now, and for good reason. And of course, you'll see it now in the playoffs where you may go with a starter for only four innings and get him out. And then, I mean, even the Cardinals in 06 against the Tigers, they used a lot of that bullpen to get through those games. And, of course, this last year, the Tampa Rays started the bullpen.
Yeah.
Which is something I never thought I'd see in my life. Of course, I never thought I'd see a pandemic like this in my life either that would shut down sports in general. Trevor, you had some not-so-great news about Houston, the college football team. What did you read, and why are you doing this to us on a Friday, of all things?
Well, first I was going to say that to the point about baseball, I remember when, this wasn't that long ago, but I remember when Chapman first came in the league, like I said, like ticket sales literally spiked for the Reds because people were so interested to see a guy throw 100.
Incredible.
And now, I mean, like Jose Alvarado on the Rays is throwing 102. Betances throws 101.
Jordan Hicks.
So now even that has been
105.
Right. And he's got the record, right? I think. I mean, now even that has been so desensitized that he throws 102. Okay. 102 is insane. I mean,
Monday we talked to Reed Detmers, who was the 10th pick, and I had misjudged it. I thought he was more of a power pitcher, but he said, no, I only get it up to about 93, 94. What? And that's not considered, and it's not.
I know.
It's not considered a power pitcher if you're throwing 91, 92. You're more of a control.
Well, no, that's slow.
That's slow now.
It's like Dan Heron going up there and tossing a pitch.
But can you imagine? I mean, 92 miles an hour, and that's slow.
I remember when the Fox graphics in the early 2000s had the little flame next to like 94. So like on, you know, the radar gun, and then there'd be like the little flame because it was 94. Now it's like 94 is like, you don't get the flame graphic until you're like 101
right,
or something.
Right, we're not even bringing it out.
Every bullpen pitcher, especially from the right side, is throwing like 97.
Agree.
There's probably very few
Steve C-Shack
that don't have 97 mile an hour throwers.
C-Shack burned down her sea shed.
By the seashore.
C-Shack throws like 92 with that awkward Kent to Colvey. There's a name you guys don't remember.
No.
Real quick, Will Klein, his curve is 80. So to go from 99 to an 80 curve,
Can you imagine?
That's tough.
You're sitting in the box. You go up to the bat. You go up to plate against Will Klein. You're like, all right, I'm going to let him get one in on me here. I'm going to hope that he starts me 1-0. Boom, throws you a 98 fastball down the gut. You're like, all right, well, I'm down 0-1.
Then I didn't really see that, but I heard it.
You're right, I heard. And then all of a sudden he comes back, and you're like, well, I better gear up here. And then he comes back with an 80-mile-an-hour curve, and you're way ahead of a check and swings because you're like, wait, that's not where it needs to be. And now you're 0-2, and you're thinking, okay, is he going to throw an 80-mile-an-hour curve again in the dirt, or is he going to go high heat here at my eye level at 99? So now that's your guess. So now I'm asking you as the hitter to guess between an 80-mile-an-hour curve down or a 99-mile-an-hour fastball up. And that is what I'm explaining to you is why you cannot think in the batter's box. And I know hitters do. I'd love to have Dan Hartlib on or somebody in the future that would talk about that. Like, how much should you think in the batter's box, or is it more react? Because I know guys go up with a game plan.
Yeah. You got to be able to read situations
right.
and what they've done or what tendencies are. But it's funny for me to say, well, you see the ball coming out of the, you see the spin or you see the laces or the seams, I should say.
Yeah, right.
Do you see seams on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball?
No.
You see a blur.
You just see a blur.
I do wonder that when a guy hits like a walk-off home run, then they interview him and he goes like, yeah, I could tell that was a changeup down and out. I'm like, you can?
Have you ever seen, like, well, I know you have. They'll, like, sometimes in Cardinals games, I can't speak to Cubs games. In Cardinals games, they'll show the picture from behind the screen at home plate.
Yeah.
And you have literally that much time to react. And it's like, oh, and yet these guys do it.
It's easy for me to say because I'm the opposite of a professional baseball hitter, but I'd just be up there hoping to make any type of helpless contact. I'd be choking up when the count is 0-0.
It's ridiculous. I know in fast pitch, and here we go again, I'm comparing myself to Jim Edmonds and the crew. In fast pitch, the older I got and the slower I was with reactions, I used to be a guy that would always go look at, they had to throw me a strike before I'd swing. I'm like, you know what? And a lot of times you'd get up 1-0 because the pitcher might dabble with a little bit of a rise ball and try to get you to go. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to make you bring me a fastball. And I'm going to try to work the count in my favor. The older I got, I couldn't afford to do it. So I would go up there first pitch. I'm like, I'm looking fastball here. And then, of course, they would throw one that was like a rise ball above you. And you're swinging from your heels. And it's like, that's not. Why is there someone right outside in our yard?
What do you mean?
Well, she's literally right outside the,
I don't know.
Squirrel! Is she okay?
Does she want to get on the air?
I don't know. I guess you could ask if she wants to come in and chat with us. All right.
Appears to be lost.
That was like when Mary Henson came up to the window.
I know. That was the weirdest thing. Lou Henson and Mary Henson came to join our show.
But it was in the winter, right?
Doors were locked, and it was the winter.
So it was like pitch black at 4 o'clock.
Yes.
The door was locked, and so she came around to the window and knocked on it.
And I felt this tall. I mean, I've never felt worse in my life than I did that day. The door was never locked. And that day, for some reason, somebody locked the door on their way out.
And even Lou Henson.
And Lou and Mary were
not get in.
Locked out. And then Mary walks around and knocks on the window. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. I apologized to her 5 million times that day.
There appears to be a water leak or sprinkler going. And taking a picture, maybe trying to get a hold of us to let us know about it.
Oh, maybe that's it. Well, that's nice of her to do that. That's very nice of her.
Wow, that's interesting.
Well, and we got an issue. So,
indoors. It seems to be
falling
apart.
If we start seeing water come in, we may want to run.
I'm just trying to delay my
pictures on the beach, and we're just trying to cool off here.
Is Hans on a 3-week vacation?
I don't know where Hans is.
He sent us a picture of him doing the Who You Got on a beach with a sunset in the back. And I'm like, what? I mean, but he's been gone. This is his third Friday in a row gone.
I know.
So not only did he not mention that he was going to be on vacation that first Friday, he didn't mention that he was going to be gone the entire month. The entire month?
He gave himself a month off after creating such a great segment with Pat Chambers. And Chambers came on the show, and he's like, you know what? I'm done.
I've done my job. He literally has done his job. He's made Who You Got at top-tier level now. It's incredible. All right, when we come back...
I was trying to delay the bad news by talking about that.
Oh, you never did say that about Houston.
So this is from Stuart Mandel. The University of Houston is immediately suspending all athletic workouts after 6 players tested positive for COVID on the football team.
Jeez. That's rough.
It's not going to happen, guys. It's not going to happen. I don't think sports is going to happen until we have a vaccine.
Illini basketball team just showed up today.
Now, what's interesting is Illinois did say that they're not going to make the results public.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas
I did hear
it
that.
It seems like pretty much every other school I've seen so far has been tweeting out the results of all their testing.
I don't know. I mean, you have to be safe. That's the bottom line. If that is your son or daughter away at college, you want to know that they're going to be safe. I totally get that. I'm not mad at them. I'm not mad at Houston for saying we're shutting it down. I'm just mad. And it's an enemy that we can't get mad at. It's like when you stub your toe on a couch and then you kick the couch. Boy, that did a lot of damage. Way to go. That couch is hurting now. You just hurt yourself again. I mean, there's nothing that we can do about this. I'm just glad that the PGA is at least going. Gives you a little hope. You got NHL trying it. But, now, you know, you look at, like, NASCAR. I mean, NASCAR, you can kind of, you know, you get a driver in a car. He's by himself, right? Now, I know you got the pit crew and all that. But, you know, you start getting hockey and basketball, and all of a sudden somebody tests positive. You know, Vladdy Tarasenko tests positive for this thing for the Blues. Okay, do the Blues shut it down? Or is Yachty, or is Vladdy just out? And if you're the, you know, if you're the Colorado Avalanche and you find out this morning at 10 that Vladdy tested positive, do you want to play the Blues tonight at 7? Knowing that he's been around these other guys? I mean, I don't know. It's this is hard, man. This is something that that obviously we know we've
it's
never seen.
Interesting
before.
To know what the breaking point is.
Right.
And then to think about Houston, 6 players clearly traveled to campus with it.
Right. Right.
Assuming they just got there.
Yeah.
That seems really high to me. I'm no.
Six. I agree.
I'm not trying to play Fauci here, but they had 40 players come and 6 have it. I mean, that's almost saying a quarter of the people who showed up.
I agree.
I mean, that seems like. I mean, the national average for kids, people my age, is like not even 1%.
Right.
And I know this is a ridiculously small sample size, but almost 40 or. What, 25%? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really high. And there's been other schools coming. Clemson had 3 out of 40 test positive, but they didn't shut it down.
Okay, well, and that was going to be my question. What I'd like to see more than anything is just if one kid, you know, if Brandon Peters tests positive, you know, I'm sorry, Brandon, I hope you don't, obviously.
Well, we won't know that because it's not public.
Well, we won't know it, but if it were public and he would then Illinois shut down, does it have to be 6? Does it have to be 10?
Clearly, 6 out of 40 was too many for their liking, but I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, Texas's numbers have been really bad, too.
Right.
So maybe that has something to do with the context, whereas Illinois has been some of the best.
That's true.
Recently. So I don't know.
Well, when we come back, we got Who You Got, of course, at 5:30 without Hans.
We'll be fine.
Yeah, we've learned to live without him. We've learned to live without you, Hans. And then we're going to recap Brian Bartow's thoughts and that home run chase audio. You're going to hear from an excitable Joe Bach.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the most exciting I've ever heard. And then you're going to hear from a boring Tom Brenneman.
And I'm kind of piped up about it.
And you're piped up and really, not really happy about it. But you're going to hear some McGuire and Sosa home runs next. We'll talk a little bit about it if you want to weigh in. 359-2255. It's The Drive.
This episode of The Drive with Lante and Derek Piper is brought to you by Two Men in a Truck, movers who care. Visit them online at twomenchampagne.com for a free estimate.